Good evening. A pleasant Sunday evening to you all. This is Jordan Rich here in my usual perch, Sundays from 10 to midnight. Steve Lavelli follows at midnight. Busy show tonight. We'll be talking health in the first segment. We'll look at John Kerry and whether or not his divorce papers are fair game in segment two with Open Lines. We'll also talk with a member of the Islamic community about the Middle Eastern violence at 11 and even touch on preparation of wild salmon, because after all, July 4th, it's salmon and peas, right? Anyway, we've got a whole boatload of things to do. Let's get to our first topic, which is health in a very general sense. We're talking with a representative from the New England School of Whole Health Education. Her name, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and she has conducted private practice in whole person health care since 1976, and she's been involved with this organization. And we just want to flush out some of the confusion and misconceptions, and also perhaps set the course right for our own health. And we welcome Dr. Donadio to the program. Hi there.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, Jordan. How are you?
Good health. That's good.
I just want to tell you, I did have wild salmon last night, and it's awesome.
Me too. I love it. And we're going to talk about that in hour number two. And that's an aspect of good whole health. That's taking care of yourself and eating the right foods. But let's first have you explain. There's a lot of terminology and a lot of misconception and confusion these days about the terms alternative health, Western medicine versus Eastern medicine, and whole health. Can you set the record straight in just a few seconds for us, if
oh,
that's
sure.
possible?
I'll give you the speed dial version of this. In the old days, 30 years ago, when alternative health care was called such a thing, it was not popular, and it was actually seen as kind of fringe medicine. Today, it's actually called integrative medicine, which means that these are modalities that are now being integrated into allopathic or medical care. So the whole concept of alternative medicine has really kind of fallen by the wayside, in the sense that most hospitals now are offering many services that patients can buy while they're actually in the hospital. You can have aromatherapy, you can have Reiki, you can have massage, you can have energy healing. Very interesting, and there are a lot of hospitals in the Boston area that are actually doing that now.
There have been pioneers along the way, and many of them have not even been medical people. I'm thinking of, well, Norman Cousins comes to mind, who wrote that great book about laughter and healing and all that, and it became a bestseller, and people all of a sudden started waking up to the fact that there were all kinds of things that are not generally prescribed that can work, and I think that's a testament to not only people in the medical field, but people outside the field. Tell me about you. You've been practicing in private practice since the 70s, and you've been working with the New England School of Whole Health Education. How would you classify what it is you do, and where do you do it?
Well, the program that I'm involved with, which is at the New England School, which is a whole health education program, I would say in terms of pioneering, I think the New England School actually is the pioneer of bringing about a renaissance, because none of this is new. I want to go on the record as saying that, because back thousands of years ago, actually, whole person care, Hippocrates talked about it, Florence Nightingale talked about it, even more recently. This is not a new concept. These things tend to be cyclic. They run in cycles.
Talk tonight with the Jordan Rich Show. Great news, traffic, and weather tomorrow morning, all on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Welcome back. It's 10:18 here on WBZ. Our subject in the opening segment of the program is health. We've reestablished contact with our guest. She is Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and she is talking to us from the New England School of Whole Health Education in Wellesley, Massachusetts. We're just examining this issue of whole health in America today in 2004. Welcome back, Doctor.
Hi, Jordan. That was a wild ride.
That's okay. I'm glad you're back, and the health of our phone lines has improved. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Let's cut right to the chase and talk a little bit about the fact that we're experiencing now in this whole health movement an attempt to address the whole human, and that's what you're talking about here.
Right,
and
we're
that,
talking
that
about
means, yeah. I'm sorry, that means more than just even diet and exercise as opposed to just medicine treating a problem. It means what? Physical, emotional, and spiritual health?
Well, it goes beyond that. When we talk about whole person care, one of the things, and I can speak from the school's perspective, we developed a model of providing a perspective for people, a model of whole person care that looks at the physical part of the person's experience or their problem or complaint or what they're presenting. The emotional component, the nutritional, chemical, the environmental, both internal and external, and also the spiritual, which includes tribal, like family issues and values and worldview and things of that nature. Because Albert Einstein said that you cannot fix a problem with the same thinking that created it. So unless we're provided with another perspective, another way of looking at the same kind of process that we go through every day of our lives, we're unable to make behavioral changes, which are what is really necessary for us to understand how things happen, you know, cause and effect of health and disease, and how we can make changes. So by creating a model that is very common sense, very straightforward, very demystified and available to people, that gives the power of ownership of health and prevention to the individual.
Doctor, let's talk a little bit about where general practitioners are today. I've interviewed many. I have many friends in the field, and they are, many of them, moving in this direction, understanding the need to do this. But there still is a trend in medicine, obviously, to not want to talk about anything beyond black and white. What's prescribed? Here's what we're doing to treat you after the fact. You feel that you're making progress, you in the general sense, in changing attitudes in the medical profession?
Well, you have to give the credit to the consumer. The most important thing to realize is that what drives healthcare, what drives anything, is the people who are willing to pay for it. And so I think the American public is incredibly sophisticated, very well educated, especially here in the New England area. People are very bright. They're very consumer driven. They're now starting to look at, you know, what's in it for me? You know, how can I participate in this? And what do I need to know to take care of myself? You know, the baby boomers, of which I am one, I'm 58 years old, we're a group of people that are saying, hey, look, I want to live to be 100, you know, and in order to do that, I can't sit in the back seat and let the doctor be the driver. We are the center of our health care. We are the people that live in our body 24/7. And doctors are wonderful and medicine is great, but they're not responsible for how we take care of our body, except for the fact that doctor means teacher. And teacher means to bring out of or draw out of misunderstanding or lead out of misunderstanding. So the role of health care is twofold. You've got acute care that is absolutely brilliant and wonderful, and we want to, you know, celebrate the technological miracles that we have today in medicine. But on the other hand, chronic care, which makes up 89% of the budget of expenditure on health care, that has to do with really inviting people into the process of owning and changing their behavior, owning the way that we make choices, the way that we live, the thoughts that we think, and the things that we do. Because on a day-to-day basis, health and disease is fundamentally an outgrowth of all of the physical and emotional, environmental, spiritual, nutritional things that we do on a day-to-day basis.
I couldn't agree more. Now, a lot of folks, however, have the lemming mentality. They will listen to a doctor and not even ask questions. They're afraid to. Or they are concerned with that all-important and ugly issue of how they're going to pay for their health care in the first place. We know that that's a problem. But what advice would you give to our wonderful listeners in all 38 states and Canada who are simply now going to their regular doctor's visits, or they're dealing with a hospital visit on a regular basis for whatever? What can they do today to start empowering themselves?
Well, the most important thing, I think, is to start from the position of realizing that this is your life. This is the quality of care that you have to demand. You have to ask the question. You have to be a good consumer. We spend more time buying a car. We spend more time researching about cars, researching about refrigerators. We spend more time looking into consumer products that are not anywhere nearly as important as the most important consumer product, which is healthcare. So the first thing we have to do is realize we are in control. We're the power brokers in terms of how we define the American healthcare system. Americans vote with their pocketbook, and they do it not only politically, they do it as far as their healthcare is concerned. And I always say to my patients know that in my practice, you know, hey, they're in control. I'm there to facilitate. I'm there to listen. I'm there to provide information for them so that they can make choices. People have this wonderful ability to demand and to vote with their pocketbook and say, that isn't good enough, doctor. I want to understand what you're saying to me. And if we take that attitude, we're going to transform the healthcare system as we know it today.
I'm talking with Dr. Georgiana Donadio in segment one of our program tonight, the New England School of Whole Health Education. And one of the things that really bugs me, and I love freedom, and I think we're God bless the fact that we live in this beautiful culture. But one of the things that bugs me is that there is so much material and medicine and phony medicine and phony herbal product out there that's driving people crazy because they're guaranteed all these, quote, claims, and there's no governmental body, particularly with the herbal medications out there, to sort of oversee this.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I want to jump in there. I want to say a couple of things. Number one, it's the same game in town. I've been in medicine and alternative health care for 44 years. I started off many, many years ago in the early 60s, mid-60s as a nurse's aide and a practical nurse. I then went into chiropractic care, clinical nutrition, and education. And I will tell you that the mystification and the kind of the selling of drugs, the selling of herbs, the selling of vitamin pills, what we're really looking at, unfortunately, is this consumer commercialism, because every year over 110,000 people die of prescription drugs. Over 4,000 people die of over-the-counter drugs. And what's amazing is that there are almost none. Some years there'll be one, sometimes two, sometimes four. But there are almost no deaths from vitamins and herbs. But I agree with you in the sense that the deal is this. The pharmaceutical companies produce 96% of all vitamin pills in this country. That's why the FDA has not clamped down on the multi-trillion dollar vitamin industry, because the real beneficiaries of that happen to be the pharmaceutical companies. What is not happening is that the pharmaceutical companies, although there is some marketing of herbs, they're not in the herb business, because you can't patent and you can't control herbs the way you can vitamins and or drugs. So while I agree with you and I know where you're coming from about it, I will say to you that it's all the same thing. It's just a matter of which politics is controlling the marketing and the actual revenue of a particular product.
Because if FDA or any organization like that put its stamp of approval on a product and had some, it seems to me, some oversight, it would make a lot of us breathe easier. And it would also, I think, alleviate the problem that people will just try anything because it sounds like the magic bullet. And I'm not suggesting, I agree with you about prescription drugs. You're absolutely right. It's out of control.
Well, yeah, I think you have to look at the numbers, though, Jordan, and I know where you're coming from, and I agree with you, I mean, in theory, for sure. The issue is that we have, you know, we've got a huge number of people that are dying from iatrogenic disease who, you know, are going into hospitals and dealing with drugs and are dying. Unfortunately, that is part of the byproduct of a very sophisticated technological medicine. So when we look at the disparity between the numbers, we do have to realize, while I also believe that there should be some control over anything that people are buying, as far as, you know, the danger of herbs, they really don't even come close in any way to the concerns that we should be having over what some of the pharmaceuticals. Now, in the New York Times and the Globe today, you'll see there's big, big, big stuff going on here in Boston regarding some of the dealings of the drug companies and the kickbacks and the monies and, you know, some of the inner workings of, you know, how drugs are pitched and sold and manipulated. So I think it's very important for us to understand that what drives everything in our culture is the dollar, and that's why the consumer in healthcare is in control of how we can transform healthcare.
But there has to be, and I'm sure you'd agree, an overall change in thinking among people and educators and kids and adults as well, in the sense that we have to start taking personal responsibility for our health. Those people out there who are drinking, smoking to excess, eating the wrong foods, and then they complain when they get run down sick or end up with artery disease at the age of 35. Yeah, I feel for them, but I also feel they had an opportunity, and perhaps it was partly not their fault, but partly it is, to change their lifestyle a bit, to try to live a healthier life, and then not force the system to be taxed to try to take care of them.
Well, yeah, I agree, but there are two sides to that. I just wrote an article for Wellbeing Journal that talked about taking a look at the other side of it. We live in a fabulous country, but we live in a culture that we're not kind and gentle with one another. We live in a very competitive, highly materialistic. We are really not living in a society that nurtures us. We're not living in a society that invites us into being authentic or invites us into relaxing. We're one of the most driven, overworked societies that has existed, actually, on the planet. And if you look at the American culture and you look at the anxiety and the stress level of Americans, why do we overeat? Why do we smoke? Why do we drink coffee? Why do we do these things? Because we're trying to self-soothe. We're trying to self-medicate ourselves. We're trying to feel better. We're exhausted. We're overwhelmed. We're driven. We're anxious. We're afraid of failure. We're very competitive. We have all of these different things that are going on. And yet, we know that we should be taking control of our health, but we got to run with the kids and go to work and, you know, clean the house and keep up with the Joneses and all those other things that we do. So I think that what you're looking at is a cultural problem. You know, we're a codependent. We're very much a codependent culture. And what we need to do, I don't know how successful we're going to be at doing it. What we need to do is examine the way that we function in our families, in our towns, in our communities, in our churches, in our synagogues. How do we treat each other? You know, are we nurturing one another? Are we creating a safe and healthy culture and environment for people? And I think if you read the news and listen to, you know, listen to the late news at night, there's no doubt that we are not living in a culture that is inviting that kind of healthy living.
Oh, that's a good point. Excellent point. Just a few more things. One is, at the New England School of Whole Health Education, you are training people on a regular basis for careers in healthcare that are in the whole health direction. And I'm just wondering if you could very quickly tell us what kinds of careers are we talking about and what kind of opportunities, because there are people listening to us tonight who might be thinking about moving into this area and are concerned and actively looking to participate in a system that makes sense. And I think this makes some sense for many people. What are the opportunities?
Well, we have a program for nurses called Whole Health Educator Certificate Program for Nurses that has been endorsed and approved by the American Holistic Nursing Association. It's also approved for continuing education for credits for social workers and nurses. We have a whole health medical assisting course, which creates and trains medical assistants to also be health educators. All of our programs are geared towards bringing in patient health education in this very whole person, holistic, integrated, evidence-based kind of training. So we've got, for people who have never done any kind of healthcare, or are, you know, we've got a lot of second career people coming out of all different kinds of corporations and businesses. We have a whole health educator program that's a two-year training, plus a one-week intensive where we do an intensive training in terms of the model. We also have programs for people who are in healthcare, complementary and alternative medicine people. We have life coaching. We've got CEUs, and we've got even a program for people who, just for themselves, called To Be a Human Being, which is a 14 videotape program that you can watch at home and kind of get the bigger picture for yourself. So,
by the way, that I would like to be a human being. I think I know it's a wonderful idea, by the way. But when you just say it out of context, it sounds silly to some people. But I understand exactly where you're coming from, and the word whole. W-H-O-L-E. I mean, why would you want to be anything but whole?
Well,
and yet
this is
we
a good
are.
Point. Our
we
program
are.
Is called To Be. It's really, what does it mean to be a human being? And we're losing touch with a lot of that today. You know, that sounds kind of trite and silly, and it could if you hear it in a certain way. But in essence, in the world that we're living in today, especially in the New England region and the West Coast, if you go out to the coasts, we are living in a way that is, we're really starting to lose pieces of ourselves, and we all know what that means.
No, sure.
And so we need to reevaluate, what does it mean? What is essential and necessary and healthy? What is holy? What is good? What is meaningful? What is rewarding in being a human being, and how to be that kind of successful, happy, and healthy human being? So there's a lot of things that we do in our course to remind people. You know, people are very intelligent. We start with the assumption people know what they need. We're there to facilitate and remind people and invite people back into their fullness or their wholeness. So in that regard, I think our programs, we've had physicians take the program, PhDs, scientists, people who are high school graduates. It runs the gamut, and it's open for everyone, and it's really an invitation for us to return to our wholeness and be the people we want to be.
People can find out more on the website wholehealtheducation.org, wholehealtheducation.org. Located in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Do you make house calls? You sound like a pretty good doc.
Well, I actually do make house calls myself personally, but, you know, in my practice, what I hope to do, and I always tell people, you know, we're working in partnership. You're the star, and I'm the, you know, I'm the facilitator. I'm working in the background. People really have the answer. If you ask, you sit down, you take 100 people and say to them, well, what do you think the problem is? What do you think's wrong with you? I guarantee you that 95 to 96% of those people know exactly what's wrong with them and exactly why whatever has happened has happened. We're deeply divine and brilliant and extraordinary beings, and our program meets people in that way. We respect people, and you know, I think it's time that we celebrate being human beings. We're wonderful creatures, and we're capable of extraordinary things. But we have to remember who we are, and we have to treat each other with a great deal of respect and compassion.
Well, I thank you for joining me in this short segment to tell our audience a bit more about where Whole Health is going. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, thank you, and thanks to the phone company for helping us connect once again.
Thank you, Jordan.
Delightful talking with you. Best of luck.
Have a great evening.
Right, good night. That's a very fine representative from the New England School of Whole Health Education. And, well, just another example of where we're going in terms of health care and how it's evolving. And it's important to reach out, as they say, and be your own advocate.